Well, let's return to the US, where the former police officer accused of killing an unarmed black man in Minneapolis will appear in court later today. Derek Chauvin is charged with murdering George Floyd after he knelt on his neck for almost 9 minutes. This case has triggered violent demonstrations across the country, and riot police have used tear gas and rubber bullets to try and quell the violence and bring the arson and looting under control. Joining me now is Tom Nolan, who's a former Boston police officer and a former policy advisor at the Department of Homeland Security in the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties in Washington, D.C. Tom Nolan, welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Yes, good morning.
Tom Nolan, we'll all pretty much watch that footage of the Minneapolis police officer, as he was, Derek Chauvin, kneeling for more than 8 minutes on George Floyd's neck. What was your reaction when you watched that video?
I think excessive, and I think I shared the sentiment that many people had of outrage and anger, and just the sheer excessiveness of the force. And it's being unnecessary, completely unnecessary. They were responding to a report of a minor crime, and to, you know, given the history of what's going on in the United States as recently as 2014, with applying these kinds of holds and the pressure that ensues on someone's neck, and at least for the last 2 or 3 minutes when the officer was kneeling on Mr. Floyd's neck, he was non-responsive, and spectators, people and onlookers were shouting at him to get off the neck, and he refused to do so. So I think that video obviously went viral, and I share the sentiment that most people did when they observed it, and that was outrage.
Now, the police officer who had his knee on the neck has been charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. Three other officers are yet to be charged. We spoke earlier with Mark Morrell from the National Urban League, former mayor of New Orleans himself, who said being charged is one thing, but too many times, in fact, most times, when a police officer is charged with a black death like this, it is not, he is not convicted and he is not jailed. Is that still the case, and are you worried that this might take too long and end up at the wrong place?
One would hope that a conviction will be obtained and upheld, but you're correct in pointing out that the history of prosecutions of police officers in the United States almost invariably end up with an acquittal. And in this case, the prosecutor moved very quickly to charge this police officer. He was fired the same day that the incident happened, Mr. Floyd's death. And so one can hope that that the district attorney, the prosecutor, has done all due diligence before he brought the criminal charges, and that they will stick, and that they will be it will be a conviction obtained, and that conviction subsequently upheld. But the history is not pointing in the right direction there, unfortunately.
Tom, you're a former police officer yourself. You've advised the Department of Homeland Security and the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. Can I ask you about the policing that we're watching now? Initially, in the face of the riots, the police retracted altogether in Minneapolis because they were outnumbered. It was very violent. The attacks were focused on burning down police stations and police cars, and they retreated almost altogether. Now, of course, they're back, not just the police, but the National Guard. So there's full riot gear, there's rubber bullets, tear gas. What's your view of this policing response? Is this the right way to police protests when they're at this level?
No, it's not. And this kind of hyper-exaggerated and militarized police response, in the United States at least, it inevitably comes to a bad end. And we're seeing an increase, and so now we're entering our sixth night of what will no doubt prove to be violent confrontations between the police. And I should point out, too, that most of the protesters, the vast majority of them, are unarmed and they're peaceful. There has been looting, there has been incidents of arson and other kinds of projectiles and whatever thrown at the police, but for the large part, these protests are peaceful. And the police, in increasing the level of aggression and violence that they direct at the protesters, are going to continue to experience the resistance that we've been seeing night after night after night. And going back, as recently as 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri, and the shooting death of Michael Brown in August of that year, protests began immediately and continued from August until November. So if we've learned nothing, it's that this kind of militarized police response is counterproductive and actually exacerbates the situation.
It must be a very difficult situation, though, in terms of policing when, I mean, we've all seen the images. You talked about the looting, but we've seen shops on fire in Los Angeles. We've seen cars burning in pretty much all of the cities. It's got to an extreme level of violent protest. The police were outnumbered and basically had to retreat. They couldn't get it under control. What is the option then, other than something? I mean, are you surprised that the president and some of the governors have welcomed in the National Guard when they see their cities burning like this?
The history of the National Guard being deployed in situations involving civil unrest in the United States has been abysmal. And usually, and when we talk about the National Guard, these are people who are part-time soldiers who serve one weekend a month, and some of them go, you know, admittedly full military duty to Iraq and Afghanistan, but they have no experience and no training in going into situations in urban areas and confronting large numbers of protests. So we've had, certainly going back to 1970 in Kent State University, we had civil unrest in the 60s, and we had four students murdered by the National Guard there. So what I have seen is in cities like Atlanta and cities like Dallas, where police chiefs, even Baltimore, that has an unsavory history of police violence, where police officers without riot gear have gone out, and the chief in Atlanta, who's a woman, went out and met with demonstrators and protesters and had a calm discussion with them and was able to alleviate the situation and to calm the situation down and to lessen tensions. The same occurred in Dallas. When the police assume this militarized posture, they see the protesters as the enemy, and they believe that they're fighting a war. We even see many police dressed up in military uniforms, carrying military weapons, driving military vehicles, and they assume the stance of a soldier on the field of battle, and that inevitably has a bad result for people who are exercising their First Amendment rights to peacefully assemble, to speak, and to have the media. And we should note that the news media are being attacked in the United States. We've had situations where a CNN crew on a live broadcast was arrested, the producer, the cameraman, the reporter, while they were on live television. Mm. We had an MSNBC reporter yesterday was shot by a rubber bullet, and there are indications that some police departments, and we have over 18,000 of them, that's why we're having such a difficult time bringing this under control, that some police departments are actually targeting members of the media, which is unconscionable.
Okay. You're listening to Iron Breakfast. Tom Nolan is our guest, a former Boston police officer, a former policy advisor, Department of Homeland Security. Just to go back a bit, rather than to the policing response, to the problem in the first place is that these incidents keep happening, and that's what sparks these protests. And the death of George Floyd is not an isolated incident, and nor is it an isolated incident in Minneapolis, which has a bad record of relations between police and black citizens. There's been efforts taken. There's been reviews in Minneapolis. The former chief of police, implemented a couple of years ago a major inquiry to take steps to, you know, improve the training of implicit bias and mandating use of body cameras. But we're still at this point. Why aren't those efforts that have been made by many, many police departments, why aren't they changing the statistics? What's going on out there?
I think what they fail to do is they're failing to change the culture of policing. And the culture of policing in the United States is one that supports and endorses the use of violence, particularly against African Americans. That's been the history of policing in the United States. That hasn't abated over the decades, and it continues. The police in the United States kill over 1,000 people a year, and in proportion to their numbers in the population, African Americans are far, far more likely to be the victims of a police deadly force incident than their white counterparts. In fact, they're 3.5 times more likely to be shot and killed by the police than are white people in the United States. That hasn't changed, and that's not going to change until situations like this, when police are arrested, when they are fired from their jobs, and if they end up in prison, maybe ultimately the police will get the message that gratuitous violence is not something that's going to be condoned as it has in the past.
Okay. Tom Nolan, thank you very much for joining us again on Breakfast.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Tom Nolan is a former Boston police officer and a former policy advisor at the Department of Homeland Security in the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties.